Yes.
Sorry, are we ready?
And?
Good evening, everyone. It appears that it's Wednesday night. It's 7 o'clock, and I'm on the west coast of the United States at the moment. And it's a big surprise to me that I'm here, but nevertheless, I am. And I noticed one thing is that for some reason, it's really cold here. It's cold. It's like 3 degrees.
That's true. 3 degrees from where you've just come from. Which and is, you mean Celsius, don't you?
Well, I call it centigrade, but I guess it is Celsius.
It is.
God only knows. So here we are. Here we are. Why are we here? Why is everything so different? Why are we getting started late? All of those things are going to be answered in time. Where we are is we're in the, this is the 31st class of the ARC called the American Book of the Dead Guidebook by E.J. Gold. And what we've been doing over the last several years is we've been taking one of these tomes that E.J. has written and we've been diving into it and we've been working together. And what I'm finding is that that's the only way we can penetrate this material, because there's so much there to get. And some of us were there at the beginning as the material was being developed and have had many, many years to work with it, but others of us have just had a chance to delve into it. And so I noticed, like, for instance, I read a good bit, and I'm reading it's not important what I'm reading right now, but I'm reading a particular book, and I notice I read through it in a linear fashion.
Oh, boy.
Okay? And I'm taking it in, I'm trying to say, well, what is this author trying to tell me? So I'm reading through the material, and I don't really think sometimes that I get the spirit of what the author is trying to tell me. And I read, many, many years ago, I read a book called How to Read a Book by a guy named Mortimer J. Adler. Do you know who that is, Harry?
Yes.
Okay. Mortimer J. Adler was one of the key editors of the Encyclopedia Britannica when it created what's called the Syntopicon. And he was an enormous scholar, a very important scholar in the 50s and 60s. And he wrote this book called How to Read a Book. And one of the key elements in that offering was, he says, when you're reading, you should attempt to get a feel where the author was sitting when they were writing the sentence that you are now reading. I thought about that. Well, for years I've been thinking about that, and I realized that there's a lot of these works that are out there, and I consider them both artistic works, musical works, poetic works, dance presentations, dramatic presentations, and then finally, spiritual literature, in a sense, isn't complete until the reader comes along. That the author has done something and has put something down on paper, and when we read it, it completes the action. The American Book of the Dead, among other things, is based on the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and we had a long discussion of that and its genesis. How it was a material that was found, and then when it was ready to be presented, in a sense, to humanity. So it was there waiting to be found. So the difference is that now when we're able to study this material as a group, I'm able to penetrate something and get meaning that I just wouldn't get on my own. I would not get on my own. It's like it just wouldn't be there. So anyway, we've been studying this American Book of the Dead, the guidebook, for the last several weeks, and we've been penetrating the books of the dead, the several books of the dead, and then the last few weeks we've launched into these incredible conversations that Pat and Tamara have led us on, which is a study of the sermons, which is the third part of the book, which is fascinating. And they presented lively conversations, which I've posted on the website, wingsofchaos.com. And in the course of all of that, we started asking the questions, where did these sermons come from? These are called the Sunday sermons. And I got various answers from various people, but it was like sometime in the 70s that the sermons came about. And I asked around, I asked the different people, and I said, well, what was it like when you were there? Well, I actually wasn't there for those. Or, I don't remember really. And so we kicked around, and over the last several years, I've had the opportunity of working with very unique individual. I mean, we'll get into that in a minute. Lynn Larson, who's joined Pat and I tonight and the rest of us, and Lynn was there. He was there when this material was not only being developed, but being presented in many cases for the first time. And he said that he was willing to come and speak with us tonight. And I appreciate that you've been able to come, Lynn, because you and I have talked about many things, like we talked about the American Book of the Dead and some of the other early permutations of the school. And Pat and I were wondering, were you around when the Sunday sermons took place? Were you there when the...
Yes.
You were there.
Yeah, I might say also, I just remembered that before the American Book of the Dead,
yeah,
we studied the Egyptian Book of the Dead, and we had big banners almost up to the ceiling. Look at it covered a corner and then around.
Hey, Lynn, make sure you're talking into the telephone or the directly into the mic.
All right.
This is the phone.
Telephone.
Or that.
Well, maybe that would be a way to do it.
Yeah.
If he speaks directly into that handheld.
Okay, but I need him to talk into the mic, too.
Okay,
yeah.
So hold that. Is that on? Let's see.
If I hit talk, it will be.
Okay, hit talk.
Okay.
Let's see what kind of trouble we get into here.
So tell people again what you just said.
Hold that up to you.
Yeah, hold it like you're going to talk to a person.
Was there. Oh, it's just before E.J. wrote the American Book of the Dead, we studied for probably a couple months, we studied the Egyptian Book of the Dead, which was the papyrus.
Yes.
Were you there?
Not then.
Yeah. Okay. And it was on the wall, wall, all the way up to the ceiling.
So
it was probably 15 or 20 feet long.
So this is something we've never heard before.
I have not heard this.
So we've talked about the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and Lynn and I have too, by the way. But now he's saying that in addition to that, EJ opened up and began helping penetrate the Egyptian Book of the Dead, and one thing he did is he had the hieroglyphics on the wall.
Yeah, on the wall.
And it doesn't surprise me.
It was about 15 feet long and about maybe 2.5 feet, 3 feet wide, something like that.
Okay.
2.5 feet, 3 feet wide, and the images were from
the
something
of
Ani. Raw of on on.
I think I can't remember.
Yeah,
yeah,
because the images that are in this book are that.
Yeah. Now,
These were drawings.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so hang on a second.
Well, I'm just gonna recall. Okay. Well, we'll work on that. Give us a second here.
Pat, what are you looking at?
The book that I'm showing Lynn has reference to the images that the group was using when they were penetrating the materials that he's saying came before EJ developed out the material for the Book of the Dead, because this particular book is actually called American Book of the Dead. It is a hardcover, limited edition, before any of the paperbacks were done. This one was first. It was typed. What I was talking about is the text that I'm showing in my hands here is from the versions before the Books of the Dead that were developed by EJ. These are the precursor. This is the study book. Can I hand this to you, Lynn, for a second? And I was just going to hold this phone for you to just tell us. No, I had a reason for him to hold it.
Okay.
I was going to just give Lynn a chance to talk. I'll hold the phone for you about the way that the images at Red House were used for people to work with.
The Egyptian
yes.
images. They were, if I remember right, they were colored. They were paintings,
yes.
drawings that were colored.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
That was almost 50 years ago.
It is
47.
It is more than 50 years ago. It was 72, 73, before 74, before the Book of the Dead.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because
yes.
I was there for the first book. This one had just been done when I got there.
Yep.
That was printed, I think that was printed by Pratt on the press wall.
Okay.
So when you say that, how did the material actually get up on the wall like that? I mean, like,
what do you mean?
So did you and EJ, like, draw it out?
Oh, no. It just one day I walked in the house. Well, I lived at the house.
Right.
At the Red House, came downstairs, and it was on the wall.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then
I guess he put it up.
Wow.
Yeah, we're saying that
yeah.
EJ launched.
Or it might have been he and Dan.
EJ placed the material in front of people to work with one night. And when they came downstairs the next morning, it was there for them to start working with. See, people can't hear either this one or this one because you move your head back and forth. So just hold your head still, and I'll put the microphone in front of your mouth, and then people will hear you. And I'll hold the phone close to your mouth, and they'll hear you. So, sorry, it's a clumsy setup, but it works. But that actually, David, if we're talking chronologically, is not the time of the Sunday sermon.
No.
That's actually 3 or 4 years later.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a background that because we open this space up,
yeah.
it's an element that we've never gotten before in our, that in a sense has been lost and now recovered. So these images were up on the wall,
mm-hmm.
and what did you guys do?
We studied the this was years ago. We were studying other things at the
yeah.
same time.
Right.
And that was one of them. We started out, I think we started out with, it wasn't Crowley, but that came
I know that
pretty
you
fast.
Part of what you had mentioned to me before.
Yeah.
And I know you were doing Beelzebubs at that time. And but so folded into that was this, the Egyptian Book of the Dead study too, because what we're looking at, and I think what we've been touching on over the last couple of years, Pat, and all of us, is we've been, how did this mind or this event start to unfold that it's given us these more mature books now, what is now the American Book of the Dead in a completed fashion in a way. So that's very interesting.
So, Lynn, when you are looking and studying materials, working as a group and working with EJ directly with the materials, was there part of this time where you guys read together or read aloud, or was any of that involved in this process? Or was it more like discussion?
Oh, no. We read many times a day, actually. Passed the book around.
Right.
Each person would read. If somebody was absent from that reading, the law was everybody would fill that person in, period.
Wow.
That has not happened
for a very long time. I remember this. When I came in Vancouver, that was the rule.
That's what we did.
Yeah. If you missed a meeting, everybody had to fill in for you what they got from the meeting so you could be with the group as they went on. Everybody filled in.
If they were off the property and gone for a day, you filled them in on everything.
Everything
that happened that day.
I remember that.
So we see the beginnings that, like, almost inherent in the way that EJ has taught over the years, was to weave the group together.
Yeah.
To weave and weave and weave this great quilt that then is available for everybody. It kind of like lives then with everybody. Everybody has all of it in a certain way. Okay, so you were reading many things, but suddenly one day all this, the Tibetan, the Egyptian material shows up. And this is still at Red House then?
Yeah.
Still at Red House. And was this at the time when the transition was going to start to come to Northern California?
Oh, no.
No, way before that.
But,
5 years?
Well, not that long.
The people on the phone cannot hear.
Can they hear Lynn say something?
It was about 4 years, I think.
Okay.
Okay.
They probably can't hear me. Yeah. It's... Okay, go ahead.
He doesn't need the next one because he's got the
I need that. I need that. So I'll lean more in like this. Is this better, Harry and George? Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm not getting, it's very broken up. I can barely hear you guys as if you were 100 yards off. I'm going to turn off my phone and just get on the computer.
Okay.
Okay.
Kay, are you around? Okay. Laura, 34. I thought she was going to come. That's okay.
Let's ask how the group movement through these different forms of the Tibetan, the Egyptian, the other forms that you were working with there, how did the link with that start to produce first that text over there and then eventually this?
The American Book of the Dead. And then, of course, I have the question, how did it also mutate into the guidebook itself, which we're now calling the guidebook. The guidebook has three parts to it. It has the introductory material, which I think is very similar to some of the material in these other...
It's very,
very similar.
It's called, in other versions, it's called
the glimpse of truth instead of the map.
And then it has, then there's 22 plus books called, the like 14th book of the dead called the book of Ulfatah. So this is the 99 names that EJ started working with in this regard.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last part of this volume then are what's called the Sunday sermons. Do you remember him working with the 99 names at all?
Yeah.
Alexandria, we used to hold a few events, and I think we had some of the, I think there were some formulations of the 99 names as part of the zikr.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been from Rashad's standing in there. So that's 74, 75.
Well, that's when I came back from
I know,
France.
That's
yeah.
when you came back. Yeah.
Yeah. When I asked about the 99 names, I had mentioned to EJ that we were going to be studying that. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are the 99 names. And Rashad had recommended that I work with that.
Yeah.
And then he did.
Yeah. Yeah, Rashad moved and started his group house. I don't remember the name of the, Tekia, I guess, study house in Los Angeles. And that would have been like January 75, something like that, give or take.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And at some point there was, I have many ideas that are hitting about, you know, how to work with this material. But right now I think we were talking also specifically about the Sunday sermon. And what is that? I mean, how did that even happen?
If I remember right, and they were all just written individually, and then we were asked to read different versions, you know, would change slightly.
Hmm.
And that's all I remember, how that
well,
came
I,
about.
I think the thing that happened was in Alexandria Street, which was in Los Angeles, that was our study house, and BJ moved towards the configuration of it being the Church of Thanatology. And from there, we moved into the configuration of the Crestline Theological Seminary, which was offering the Sunday sermons in the little clear light chapel, which was part of,
right.
I knew you'd come there, it was part of the Theological Seminary, was the chapel we were to practice doing readings and giving the sermons in the actual chapel.
Can you guys describe the chapel itself, the physical characteristics? Do you remember?
There were just two chapels. Which one are you talking about?
The one, remember when that girl that came down later with Rob Stewart, I forget her name. She had the apartment. We had the apartment upstairs for the students. No, I'm not catching you here.
No.
Mm. Well, the one that I recall, which I believe was the first one, was very small, and the pews were movie theater seats. The cushioned movie theater seats, the whole set that we used to have. We had the velvet seats. Remember those?
Oh, yeah.
And that was what we had as a pew.
And what location was that?
On the main drag on the right-hand side going towards Red House. Come up the hill from...
In Crestline.
In Crestline,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And those theater chairs were from Cosmo Street.
Exactly. Yeah, they've been around a long time, and they put them in the chapel.
And where were they from again? I just
Cosmo Street.
So they were from Cosmo Street.
Yeah.
And then you took them to
Crestline.
Up to Crestline?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. All right.
There's a whole thing about the chairs, and I'm trying to remember that story.
Did you do a practice reading in the chapel as part of your training? Because I remember I did. That was one of the things. Jerry Berman was there.
I didn't.
We had the practice sessions for doing readings. And this was the first series of readings that were done from the first printed copy of the book, not the work, not the red book, but the actual printed first copy of the book.
But what I'm hearing from the two of you, if I'm hearing this correctly at all, is that the sermons were also used as a practice method.
Yes.
The sermons themselves, you worked with reading those. Is that about right?
Well, they weren't called sermons at the time.
Okay.
That I remember.
Right.
They were just,
yeah.
You know, the way I remember is something he wrote, and we read for hours. We would read them, and then that turned into the sermons.
And it
when,
turned.
I don't know when.
Yeah.
I
so it turned into
when.
The sermons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But see, here's the interesting thing. One, we are listening. We are looking at the written word called the sermons, but they were a practice methodology. They were something you would work with. And Pat's holding up a chapter of. Something.
Lost Works.
The Lost Works, chapter 12. The great sacred hymns and canticles of the Sufi order.
We had music that we were singing as part of the sermon, part of the services, part of the whatever we were doing. This one was from February 1974. And the actual written music and verses
wow.
are included here.
Okay.
So I remember this part, which was, the order of a service, should it be, and the conversation was, Jerry Berman had the training as a rabbi, so should it be in the Jewish tradition? Somebody else had the training as a monk, should it be in the Christian tradition? Someone else had had some of the training from Rashad, should it be in the
Sufi
tradition? And so some of these configurations of the songs from the services came at the same time as what later became known as the sermons, and the songs later became known as the hymns.
Kay, are you on the line?
Yeah, where's Kay?
Did you call in?
Hello?
There she is.
Well,
can you hear me?
We'll let Kay talk.
Hello?
Hi, Kay. Happy to have you here. We're just
going yeah.
the technical issue.
You're going to be
yeah,
on the recording that goes up on the
little
site.
Hi, Lynn. Good to
hey.
See you.
How are you?
I'm doing good. You look good, Lynn.
What's your memory like, Kay? Do you remember the Sunday sermon cycle of Crestline?
Well, I'll tell you, I do have a vague memory of it. Pretty vague. But I think I at that point I did used to attend sketchily because I was, you know, when I came in, it was in 74, so I'm not sure. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
go
okay.
Ahead.
But I do remember seeing people in their, you know, the minister outfits, and that's kind of the image I have, and you know, people wore them outside of the church and around. And
oh, right. I remember
that. Bobby yeah. McKenzie
yeah.
wearing his
yes.
and, you know, everybody.
And, Mike,
So I wasn't really, I was taking the course at that time.
Okay. Ben and I.
Yeah, theological course.
We're ministers. And
yes.
Somehow EJ finagled a meeting with some real ministers for lunch at a restaurant. And Ken and I had to fake it. We had the collars and we had everything on, and they believed us. That was a real kick.
Well, I think several of us have the experience of being placed in a position like that by EJ, and they believed you. Go ahead, Kay.
I was just going to say, I remember hearing about that, and that was really interesting.
In about 10 days, actually. I'll have to remember.
We're going to do this again. We'll do this again when Ken comes and Tony, and just delve into that as well at that time.
I have another question, Kay. Do you remember sitting in the chapel and practicing doing readings?
You know, I really do have a vague memory of it. I'm not sure where my head was. I was young and kind of stupid, I guess. But I do remember. I do remember.
Well,
it was all kind of overwhelming at the time, as I recall. But yes, I do have memories of it.
What did it feel like during that time, you guys?
Powerful.
Okay.
Would you say?
What did it feel like? Yeah.
Yeah, powerful.
Well, there was a tremendous amount of energy that was being coming through. And people were very serious about what they were doing. You know, I remember with the readings. It was quite a special time, and very magical. That's what I remember. Very magical time, and Martha. I think Martha was there at that time too. I'm not sure.
Yes.
But I remember her and her, because the women wore dresses, didn't they wear brown dresses?
Yes, they did.
Habit. Yeah. Habit. Yes, thank you.
The brown was, and we had sister names. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And yeah, it's coming back now to me.
Yeah. You know, Ellen was there.
Yeah.
Ellen Tisdale.
Yeah, Ellen. Yeah, well, they had that house, that house that they lived in, I recall. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Down on the main street. Yes.
Okay. I have a question. I've been curious for a while. Do you remember in upstairs in the auditorium, the Revealing Science of God? Do you remember seeing that?
Wow. Give me a little bit more, because it's a very much of a, you know, kind of, as with all of us, kind of a vague. I don't know. It was such a powerful time.
How you were when you saw it, and that'll help her get it.
Good. It was downstairs. I can't remember how many people there. I was sitting next to my son, Chris. And I think Menlo was sitting right next to us.
Wow.
And there were people in the back.
Very young.
This is a different time. He's talking Meadow Vista now. He's asking Kate a question.
Oh.
From Meadow Vista Tone.
Oh, okay.
Upstairs, the auditorium upstairs.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And EJ gave instructions about, I remember about halfway through, he said, cheer it on.
cheer them on. Do you remember that?
Wow.
No. What's that?
Yes.
Marvette's asking, yes. Is that when we were building angels? So Marvette is saying that they physically built. By that, do you mean that individuals would form together to
yes.
configure a larger
yes.
being?
Yes.
So there would be a physical
yes.
manifestation of the larger entity.
Yes.
Is that about right?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is the time, you're talking about the time right before this, right? Or right after
the,
this?
I have a really hard time with
placing
yeah. the timing of
yeah,
the
yeah.
events now.
That's okay, and we don't need, yeah, we don't need the linear of it.
But you were there for
yes,
that,
she was
for
there.
The revealing science of God.
Oh, that you? Wasn't the revealing science of God. That was earlier.
That's what he's saying. He has a recollection of revealing signs of God. He's checking if others do also.
Oh, I think that was when you were in Southern California.
No.
No.
It was created in Minnesota?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, well, I wasn't there for the creation.
No, it wasn't created there. It was created in Southern California.
Okay. We just showed it.
We showed it there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you remember seeing
yeah.
it? Yeah. And there were, 20 people, maybe?
Oh, at least.
Well, yeah.
There had to have been 20 people, unless everybody else was in the tree planting, and I don't think they were there then. I think everybody was there then. It would have been more like 30.
Yeah.
But that's Meta Vista.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just curious.
I want to ask a question about the sermon, okay? I'm going to ask you specific. Question about one of the sermons, just so that I get your take on this, because good point of reference for me. This is from the 10th Sunday sermon, and it's in the middle of it. Says fears, which have been brought about by ignorance, are easily dispersed. But to remove the effects of billion, trillion, trillion, trillion years of beliefs rooted so deeply in humanity that a whole world of matter and energy was created out of them requires that the being be brought to a point which is far superior to those beliefs. That means that the spirit has to be awakened before it can even begin to recognize what has happened to it. You're smiling already. Tell me
no,
what.
No, just remember.
Yeah, tell me what. Tell me what. Come on, that's why I'm asking you about the sermons and this time. And
I just remember the fear in the beginning.
Yeah.
You remember the what?
The fear. And because it was going on 24 hours every day, 7 days a week. And we were all burnt out. It was fear. But that left after a while. That's
My
what I was laughing at.
No,
not exhaustion.
So was the material that he put in the book that was used for sermons, that was training material, come from the group's work together with the ideas that you were all sharing?
That's a long question.
Yes.
What a good question. Yeah. Great question. So, yeah, let's see if I got the question right, Pat. You're asking, did this material, did this training material come from the group work together?
With
what
was presented by EJ.
Which was presented by EJ to the group.
Yes, and then how that came back, the reverberation back, was the material that ended up being the sermon.
Yeah, I think that's how it all, you know, came about.
Now, the mics are way off. Lynn is saying that's how it all came about. Yeah, that's the process.
It's important for us to, for me anyway, it's important to listen to what you're, the way you're talking, and listening to that methodology, because that's available to us today. To have, there's one thing that's missing, is that we can work as a group, and then there's feedback back from the group that goes back to the group that then comes back to the larger group. That's the method that we can avail ourselves of. And many, we're looking for ways to work. You cannot work in isolation, is what I'm hearing over and over and over again. We put ourselves in the ocean like this together, and then things happen. We're washed by the salt water of initiation.
Well, Pat and I mentioned when people missed a talk or anything that was going on, everybody really strove to fill everybody in.
Yeah, make sure you got it.
That
make sure
doesn't happen a lot now.
No.
I kind of missed that.
He misses that.
Yeah, I had forgotten that's how it was.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the first encounter I had with Sheila, where she was in the Vancouver group, and she took me for a walk because I had to miss something, and she said, and this is what we covered, and this is what so-and-so said about it, and this is how we decided we were going to do it, and here's the exercise we got from EJ about it, and she gave me the whole rundown. Then she said, you should check with somebody else and see what I've missed, and the next person would give me what they heard. Make sure that there was an overlap so it wouldn't just be your opinion or your idea. There would be enough, I don't know what you call that, you know, mass tension to confirm that there was an actual holding of the transmission and it got given to everybody.
And it was taking the responsibility of passing it on. You had to. That was the law. You passed everything on.
So that was the law?
Yeah, I would say that's a law. That was the law.
It was the law. That's what I'm doing with my life. I still got two more books I got to do. You done everything yet? Do you have more shit you have to do? Yes, you're still here.
Kay, do you remember that particular aspect of it?
Golly, yes. And no. It depends on the time period. Because there was a time when I left for a few months and then I came back. Well, actually for a year. I came in 1974 and then left and came back a year later. So, you know, yes, I do believe, though, the time that I was there, and I can remember Pat passing on things to me about the ABD in particular, and people were, I thought of that tonight, and I'm just going to say it briefly, when we had our sci-fi meeting, because we had no sound. Nobody had sound. And it's like everybody waited until I was the last one until we all got brought together and had sound. So that was kind of interesting. And that's how it was before. that no man was left behind, basically.
That says it, Lynn says.
Very important that that happens.
So,
everybody had jobs. Everybody had things they had to get done. And so half of your attention, you know, the contact exercise very specifically says, place half of your concentrated attention on the facial mask of your partner and the other half of your concentrated attention on your own facial mask. And that's kind of how it was with the group. You kept your attention on the whole group in addition to your own inner work. So if you noticed that somebody was going off or they weren't able to stay with the group, you would check and see, did they need help or were they, you know, wanting to get the lesson that was given or whatever they had missed. It's like that. It was a continuous stream of concentrated attention for the benefit of the whole group, not just the individuals. Well, you have to have a phone in your hand.
This is such a profound point that Patricia brought up. And what I love hearing about it is that there is also this template that happens in gaming, in D2.
Yeah.
And so while the form may change over time, there is a foundation that remains the same. When you're gaming, you have to, you know, pay attention to what you're doing, but you also have to be aware of where everyone is in the group. And so it's just lovely to hear. So thank you.
I remember when I came up here, when I came back here, what, 28 years ago, I think, 27?
Right before we moved to Meta Vista, so...
Here. Robert Trice spent a half a day filling me in on something. I had just arrived. I remember it was at Donovan Street,
right,
out by his truck, and we were there for 3 or 4 hours. And he took the responsibility of answering a question for me.
Yeah, it was important enough for him. For him,
yeah,
to spend that time with you.
Go ahead.
First, I wanted to echo what Tamara was saying. That's the same experience when you're playing with the band, is that you have to be aware of both what you're doing and what everybody else is doing. Grant says, it's interesting because that downloading of a session to someone who missed it is a great way for the person who is passing the info along to solidify their understanding. And if we listen to a session as if we may have to download it, it brings in a different level of attention.
Good one.
Wow.
I'm fascinated by this idea that there was this sense of you felt, I'm going to use the word obligation.
Yeah. You were obligated to,
but you felt like you weren't complete until you did that.
Yeah.
Because a part of your body was missing until you could complete that with somebody.
Yeah. I can remember Ken and Tony being around. You know, somebody coming that was gone, maybe T was in town or something, and spent hours going over what he missed.
The thing I remember, Lynn, also was even before the configuration that was set up at Alexandria or the one later in Crestline, was the one you guys had in the Valley, the Valley House?
Bluebell.
Yeah. Bluebell Street.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Bluebell
House. And, yeah.
Wow.
And the first time I came down to the Institute, we stayed there before we went up the crest line, and then we went up, and Tabitha drove me. You had to go with somebody. You couldn't go by yourself.
Yeah.
And when I came back the next day, everyone asked me in the meeting, what did you get? What did you notice? What did you hear? What did you listen to? What can you tell us? I mean, I sat with Ken and Tony, and I think you were there, and the other skinny girl, Lynn Shanks.
Lynn Shanks, yeah.
And I was like a total newbie, and they wanted to know, what did you get?
Right.
So that if there had been something there going on, give, share.
Right.
You know, don't keep to yourself, offer back to the group. Because it's group stuff. It's not your stuff. That was my first experience. You know, I mean, I've been in Vancouver for 2 years, but, yeah, that was pretty interesting. I just remembered that, sitting there and Tim saying, well, you know how Tim talks.
Yeah.
We'll get to that later. Yeah. Yeah, it was always that way.
So I think for me, a lot of it is getting a sense of the dynamic of how the groups work together. And it takes a lot of work to do that. Like when Robert did that for you that day,
yeah,
it was a lot of work.
To do, too. He was on his way somewhere, and he took the time to do that.
In order to harvest the benefits of something like that in that group work, you have to put stuff into it. And Robert did that day, and you did it so many times, and Pat does it so many times. You put it in, and it's actually, I was in an event, and Pat was there too, that was very special one Easter. And during that time, I visually saw what was called a stitch in time. And that the stitch in time is due when we weave together ourselves, okay? It's worth the stretch to do it. It's worth the stretch to work together in such a way. But you have to drop the step of what am I going to get out of doing this?
You can't walk in the door with that.
You can't just
get in the doorway with that.
It's not even part of it. It's a different fabric together. It's a different fabric together that we create when you put in that kind of effort, and then it will come back to you, but it's a form of prayer that you can't seek. You just do it.
I'm wondering if, Lynn, when we told you we wanted you to come tonight, did you have anything that you wanted to make sure that we heard from you, that we haven't given you the opportunity to speak about?
No.
All right. Yeah.
Things come out.
Great having you here.
Really.
Really good.
Great value to all of us. And it's I'll tell you, it has boosted my brain immensely on group work, like a different element of group work that I'd never... I think you've told me before, Lynn, that it just struck me this time. I got it or something.
What part?
Well, this part about that, I feel obligated to tell the way you said it. There was something about the way that you said it that I got it, you know? And it's just, thank you for that.
Well, that went on for about 3.5 years.
That's a long time.
But every day, nobody left. I mean, nobody left the house. You know, to go to the market, but maybe once a month. And it was just constant.
Well, we're at the end of our allotted time in that particular way. But I wanted to say that the book, the American Book of the Guidebook, has opened this up for us. It's opened this up. The sermons and the work that you two did with the sermons opened up this particular opportunity. And I'm not too sure what to do with it quite yet. I don't quite feel that we're done, but I'm not sure yet. But I want to thank you. And was this okay? I mean,
oh, yeah.
All right. So thank you so much for coming. And we'll take a look at what our next step will be. We'll just digest a lot of this. I have a lot to digest from this. And we'll digest it, and we'll decide what our next step will be, but I can guarantee you it won't be linear. It'll be something interesting and creative. And one of the things that Pat brought is we also want to show you some of Lynn's other work, but we don't have time to do that tonight, which is why I do want you to consider maybe another invitation if you'd like to consider coming back again. Okay. We do it on Wednesday nights, and if that's okay with you. And so thank you, everybody, for coming, and we'll look forward to whatever the next installment of the American Book of the Dead guidebook might be, but I can guarantee you it's going to be interesting again. So thanks for coming, and we'll look forward to seeing you soon. Good night.
Hey, Lynn and Pat, thanks so much for sharing. I found it really informative.
Thank you.
Great seeing you, Lynn. Good talking to you.
Good night.
Good night.